Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business, all from home, from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online, downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive. Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How to Use This Recession to Break Free from Mediocrity and Create the Life of Your Dreams. It's an interview with legendary success coach Jack Canfield. Jack Canfield is the world-renowned motivational speaker and author of The Success Principles, but he's probably best known for co-founding the wildly successful series Chicken Soup for the Soul. And in this interview, he talks about how you can use this recession to discover and hone your unique abilities, take 100% responsibility for your life, and create the life of your dreams. According to Jack, most people get in the habit of waiting for something or something to come along and change their situation, when unfortunately, life doesn't work that way. In order to be successful, you have to take charge of the way you respond to the events in your life and change those responses until you get the outcome you desire. And in this audio, you'll hear exactly how to do that. You'll also hear how to sharpen your unique abilities, find a need to fill in this recession, and develop an action plan that works for you. You'll learn the three areas we have control over in our life and how to shape them into the cornerstones of success. You'll learn simple exercises to try that will help you celebrate your success and build your self-esteem. You'll learn how to change your behavior so that you're staying positive and using the law of replacement to your advantage. You'll learn why you need to be in a state of relaxation in order to be successful and how to do that, and much, much more. Jack Canfield has helped countless people get from where they are today to where they want to be, and he can help you too. All you have to really do is stay positive, take a good look at yourself and your behavior, and take action. And this audio interview is a great first step. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Senoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Senoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. And today we're talking with the amazing Jack Canfield. Thanks for joining us today, Jack.
My pleasure, Chris.
So yours is an amazing story. You came from a modest background and have created a life of extraordinary personal and material wealth. Did you have any inkling your life would be so successful in those early years?
Well, it depends on how far you go back. I mean, I grew up in West Virginia. It was the 48th state when there only were 48 states in terms of its education system. And I wasn't really thinking I was going to become super successful at anything, really. Then I started to have some people believe in me. And I began to think, well, maybe I do have something unique that I can offer and that I can be successful. And then I ended up at Harvard on a scholarship. And I had friends with names like Larry Rockefeller, Max Factor III, John Hopkins IV. And, you know, here I was, a poor kid from West Virginia, and these were sons of mega millionaires and really successful people. And I began to believe that maybe I could really make a difference. And so little by little, I just started moving in that direction. But then during the Civil Rights Movement, I became very interested in wanting to make a world that was fair for everybody. So I ended up teaching in an inner-city black school for a couple of years in Chicago. What really catapulted me into my current work was I noticed these kids weren't that motivated. And I'd always been really motivated to want to learn more, and so I thought, how do I motivate these kids? And it was then that I met a man named W. Clement Stone, who was a self-made multimillionaire worth $600 million back in 1968. And I started taking seminars at his foundation and started applying those principles of motivating kids to achieve in my classroom. And pretty soon I was being asked to teach all over the Midwest to teach teachers how to do this. And eventually one day a principal of a school said, my husband's company needs what you're doing. I said, I've never worked in a company except as a floor sweeper in college at a General Electric plant. I don't know if that's going to really work. And she said, no, they're just big kids in suits. You know how to work with kids. So I went and did this workshop for the company. They loved it, and that's what kind of moved me over into the corporate world. And when we wrote the first Chicken Soup for the Soul book, we intended it to be a bestseller, but had no idea that it would get to where it is today. And we thought we might do one sequel, and here we are. 212 books later, we have 115 million books in print in 47 languages. So we always dream big, but the dream outstripped us by a lot.
There's lots of kids out there right now that are being affected by this economy. And, you know, what would you say to them if they're struggling?
Well, I think, you know, struggling is definitely part of what's going on right now for a lot of people. But basically, I teach that you have to take 100% responsibility for your life. And that if you're waiting for someone else to do it for you, if you're waiting for someone to solve the problem, whether it's the new Treasury Secretary Geithner, or it's the guys on Wall Street, or Barack Obama, or your governor in your state, or your boss, or, you know, whatever it is, when we're looking outside of ourselves for the solution, it means we think our life is the result of somebody else's decisions in the past. And so we have to take 100% responsibility. That means giving up all complaining and all blaming. When I had my first interview with W. Clement Stone, he said, do you take 100% responsibility for your life? I said, I think so. He said, it's a yes or no question. And I said, well, I don't know. What does it exactly mean? He said, have you ever blamed anyone for anything? I said, sure. Have you ever complained about anything? I said, sure. He said, then you don't take 100% responsibility, because when you are really super successful, when you really get the principles of success that will make your life work, you realize everything in your life is up to you. It's your attitude. It's the thoughts you think. You're activating the law of attraction by the images you're holding in your head. You're either worrying and creating negative images, or you're having a positive expectation, expecting the best to happen, and you're creating positive images. Your behavior, what you do and say. Some behaviors will create failure, others will create success. You need to study the attitudes, the beliefs, the thinking patterns, the behaviors of successful people, and you need to adopt those to yourself. So I've spent the last 40-some years doing that and found that you can't wait for other people to make it happen. One of the big things I teach in this kind of economy is you have to become entrepreneurial. We have more people now working in companies they've created as solo entrepreneurs or in small companies of 12 people than we have working in the big multinational companies. We always hear about having so much trouble on TV where they've laid off 4,000 people at Starbucks or 10,000 people at Walmart or whatever. And the reality is that we are able to go out there and find a need and fill it. A good friend of mine, when the first recession hit, he was a salesman for Avery Labels, and his job became very tenuous. While he was almost being laid off, one of the things that happened is someone at a TGIF Fridays restaurant said, could you get Avery to print these labels that we're putting on the food in the refrigerator to label, like, these vegetables came in on Tuesday, so we want to use those before we use the vegetables that came in on Wednesday. But the problem is, you know, we're writing on them in magic marker. Sometimes they're not erasable. The condensation comes in that erases them. You know, it gets all wet and it runs. Could you get Avery Label to print Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and maybe make them different colors so people that aren't really too bright or that speak English, they'll know which ones they are? So he went to Avery Label, and they said no. So he said, well, I'm going to start printing the labels I buy from them in my garage. And he bought a small printing press. He started printing these. And eventually, after about 10 years, his company was called Day Dots. He sold the company for $40 million. And all they do is print dots that you put on food and other kinds of things in a restaurant business and a few other things that came up with over the years. But he found a need, and instead of saying, I can't do it, he found a way to fill it. Another student of mine that I write about in my book, The Success Principles, was going to medical school, and his wife got pregnant when they weren't planning that. And all of a sudden, he needs to get his wife not working anymore so she can stay at home and take care of the baby. And what happens there is he doesn't know how he's going to do that because she was basically putting him through medical school. He goes online. He finds a course that he can take, a weekend workshop on how to market things on the Internet. Takes the course, goes out and looks for a product he can sell. Finds that there's a product that is a test that you can give a child. It's a urine test. You can find out if they had drugs or alcohol on the date that they were just on. They come home and they urinate in this thing, and it instantly turns a color or not. You know if they smoked pot or took cocaine or whatever. I think it's called Rapid Cup. And he now makes more money off his Internet business than he'll ever make as a doctor, because he found a need that was out there, and he filled that need, and he found a way to market it. So if we're sitting around waiting rather than going out and looking for something we can do that will be a marketable product or service or whatever, we're going to get left behind, because that's just not the way it works anymore. eBay has an eBay millionaire meeting, and people that are eBay millionaires, and they want them to get together and be more effective because they're making money for eBay as well as themselves. One kid, about 3 years ago I met, he had made $10 million in 1 year selling pool tables on eBay. It started with his grandfather actually came and said, "Will you sell my pool table for me?" He said, "Yeah, I'll sell it online." So he sold it, and he made $600. And he said, "Gee, I need to find another pool table." Well, pretty soon he sold every pool table in town that nobody wanted, started importing them from China, and sold $10 million worth of pool tables. Kid never went to college, doesn't have a BA degree, and makes more money than most people you and I know. You know, one of the things we've done this year is we've made this the year of the internet in our company, because I'm 64 years old and I've traveled a lot. I love the work I do. But I said to my wife, I don't want to retire, but I want to stay home more. I still do lots of seminars, as you know, and speeches and so forth. But I really wanted to see if we could up the impact we're having through the internet. And so we just last week sold $250,000 worth of one course we have through the internet. And so literally that's what we're now learning to do as well. And, you know, it takes me about 7 or 8 talks at the fee I charge to get that kind of income, and that's usually one day there, a day to do it, a day to get home. So this is really a revolution for our business as well as for anyone. Used to be, in order to be in business, you had to have property, a building, equipment to manufacture things, a marketing and distribution system, etc. Now, with a computer and access to the internet, which is not all that expensive, you can start a business. My nephew, who, when he was 16, there was some action figure, I can't remember what it was, some movie, X-Men type thing, and he decided to buy a bunch of these guys and then sell them on the internet. He bought them wholesale and sold them retail. Then he bought, I don't remember, those scooters were all the rage at one point. They're little tiny scooters that all the kids had. And he bought those for $37.50 and sold them for $75. And he made thousands of dollars at the age of 16 on the internet. There's potential everywhere. I mean, even if 10% of our population, which they say is about as bad as it's going to get during this recession, are unemployed, it means 90% of the people still are employed. They're making a living. And there's many people who are very, very wealthy, and many people getting wealthier because of the recession, buying up foreclosed properties and selling them for more than they bought them. I know a guy that just recently bought 1,200 foreclosed houses. And so he's going to have a lot of money. And if you're selling something he wants, whether it's a car, a vacation, a service, you know, there's always going to be people that can afford to buy your services. Sometimes this is the big hard part. For a lot of people, they may need to either use the internet or they may need to move. And maybe they don't have to move permanently, but they may need to do what a lot of Mexicans have done. They come to America and send money back to their families in Mexico. People may need to leave places like Detroit and Indiana, these big construction places in Ohio, you know, manufacturing places where they're having trouble, and move to where the jobs are and then send money back. And eventually, after the recession gets through, they can return home. But most people are sitting around waiting for someone else to make it better for them. And
for more interviews with the world's top health and medical experts, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. So they can't sit back and wait for somebody else. It's kind of back to that 100% responsibility again, sounds like.
Yeah, and it's easy to want to blame someone else. But see, I teach a formula called E plus R equals O. It says there are events in your life, just like the recession. There's a response you have, and then that equals an outcome. So 2 plus 2 equals 4. So all of a sudden, the recession happens, and, you know, the economy is doing 0, plus you're 2, you're only getting 2. So if you want to go back to 4, you got to do something different. Most people are habituated, meaning that they're actually addicted to their habit patterns. There's a new book on the biochemistry of emotions. And for instance, if you have road rage every day at 5 o'clock, on the weekend when you're not on the freeway, you'll actually kind of start to get angry around 5 o'clock because your brain is used to that wash of chemicals that move through the brain when you have road rage at that time. There was a time when I had to eat peanuts around 6 o'clock at night because my brain got used to that. So it's the same thing when we get addicted to caffeine, coffee, nicotine, whatever it might be. And so we become addicted to our behavior patterns. And to break out of a behavior pattern is not that easy. And so people are just used to going to work, coming home, watching TV, going to bed. And so they're not used to going out looking for a job. They're not used to thinking about how can I find some way to serve my neighbors or my community in a way that will be beneficial to me financially. They're not used to having to be uncomfortable, if you will. And so we have to be willing to change our behavior, because waiting is a response. If we go back to E plus R equals O, it's a response to the event that doesn't produce a better outcome. So whenever you're not getting the outcome you want, you can't blame the economy or the culture or whoever, because it's just doing what it is. And so you've got to do something different. It's kind of like if it rains on your birthday, you know, we want to blame the rain for ruining our day. No, do something different. You know, have a picnic in your living room instead of out in the park. Do something creative and unique to create an outcome you want instead of waiting for someone else to do it for you. So it really is back to us. And the word responsibility means the ability to change my response until I get the outcome I want.
How do they get past that? I mean, I know you've said 100% responsibility, but what are some of the steps they can take to kind of move forward?
Well, one thing is to turn off the news. The news is basically a feedback system of the culture where the pain is. So if you step on a tack, you want to feel that in your brain so you can avoid stepping on the tack and stop and, you know, take the tack out of your foot, whatever. So the news is basically negative. You know, it's the same news every night. More people were laid off. There was a war somewhere. Somebody got arrested, whatever it might be. And most of that is not really relevant to our life. And so it puts us in a negative point of view, a negative expectation. We start to go, wow, it's so bad. Why even try it? It's going to get worse. So we hoard our money so we don't spend. That affects the economy because then there's no circulation of money. People are afraid to lend to businesses because they're afraid it's going to get worse. So the whole thing is an attitude thing. The fact is, the day after the recession happened, the big crash happened, let's say, there were just as many cars that people wanted to buy, just as many people that were willing to work, just as much cash in the economy in people's pockets. The problem is everybody got afraid and nobody was willing to spend it, to circulate it, to lend it. So all of a sudden we're in trouble. So you've got to think positive and stay positive. So turn off the news. Secondly, ask yourself, are there skills that I need to develop that I don't have? We maybe have to go back to community college. Maybe have to take an online course. Maybe go apprentice with somebody. Go to a workshop. There are more workshops and boot camps for how to invest in real estate in a down market, how to do marketing on the internet, etc., that you can attend. There's actually more education takes place every day in American hotel rooms than takes place in our schools. More dollars are spent and more people show up. And so we have to be a constant learner. And so I would say, decide, what are my unique abilities? Like, my unique abilities have to do with editing, writing, inspiring, motivating, doing research to find out what's the best way to accomplish something, etc. So then I take my unique abilities. Your unique abilities could be in carpentry. They could be in sales. They could be in whatever. And whatever you do naturally, ask, is there another way I could cast my skills in an industry or in a job or serving the community that would help people? If my business went belly up and I couldn't sell a book or I couldn't do a workshop, I'd be going door to door going, do you have a kid who needs to be motivated in school? Because I know I can motivate people. So the point being that you have to just get into action and get into communication with the community. Find out what people are wanting. What are they needing? Go door to door. Talk to people. All of a sudden you might find out that people don't have enough gas money to go and buy their groceries. You could start a grocery service. You could pick up food from the restaurants and deliver them to people's homes. You could do personal shopping for people. I mean, there's just so many things you can do. Find out who has the money and what is it they need, and then find a way to serve those people. You know, it's real basic. Stay in action and be in communication. We tend to cocoon ourselves in America, North America, and Canada, and so forth. We stay in our homes. You know, we're buying over QVC now instead of going to the store. So the reality is, if you get out and get into communication with people, patterns start to emerge. You see what people need. I had a friend after 9/11 who decided for, I think it was about 1 week, I'm not going to do my normal business. He has an internet marketing business that sells meditation tapes. He said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to interact with all of my clients. I'm going to say, send me any question you have. So he sent out an email to a couple hundred thousand people on his mailing list and said, here we are. We're in a country. We're in a very bad fix at the moment. You know, we're scared, et cetera. If you have any question at all about anything to do with emotions, growth, et cetera, personal development, ask me. And for 1 week, he said, I was on the internet just talking to people and answering their emails. He said, I learned more about my clients during that week than I ever knew. I was making all kinds of assumptions about what they knew, what they were bringing to the table when they started my courses, and I was wrong in a lot of cases. And I realized some of what I thought they were learning by taking my courses, they hadn't learned. And so he developed a whole bunch of new materials based on that, and has been twice as successful because he got into communication. When we're upset, we tend to withdraw rather than to reach out. So we have to be willing to get into communication and find out what people really need.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. What would you say to our listeners out there, Jack, that are struggling with poor self-esteem? What are some of the simple steps that people can take to create some direction and success in their lives if they're having trouble with, you know, feeling overweight or just all the other things that come along with poor self-esteem?
Sure. Basically, there's three aspects to how we deal with ourselves. We talk to ourselves, we hold pictures in our head, and we take action. That's the only three things we have any control over: the thoughts we think, pictures we imagine in our head, and what we do or say. Our self-esteem is dependent on a number of things. What is our self-talk? If every time I look in the mirror, I say, God, I'm fat, and you shouldn't be fat, you're a pig, and so forth, you're going to feel bad. If instead you say, you know, right now I'm choosing to accept and love myself just the way I am, and as a result of that, when I feel motivated, I'm going to start doing some things to lose weight. And then you envision yourself thin as you want to be. And then you take action. You know, you either curtail your calories or you get into exercise. I mean, there's only about five or six things I've learned over the years, and I've had a, I won't call it a struggle, but certainly it's one of the major issues in my life. You know, if I don't pay attention, I balloon up very quickly. And so what happens is you have to lower the calorie count, increase the exercise, drink more water, do more deep breathing because it raises your metabolism. Then you can learn some very subtle things like what foods are the glycemic index. You know, corn has more sugar in it than some other kind of carbohydrate. So you learn that stuff. And then, like, I have a thing called an exerciser. It's kind of like a little mini stair stepper. And I get on that every 2 hours for about a minute and a half. That's all I have to do. And it maintains my metabolism at a high rate, like I just came out of the gym all day long. So there's simple things you can learn, but that's a change in behavior, a change in my thinking, and a change in my self-talk, which is my thinking, a change in my imagery. And that applies to anything in relationships. If you love yourself and accept yourself, you're actually more likely to change than if you're constantly griping and bitching at yourself. When my wife gets on my case about, you shouldn't eat that, there's a part of me that goes, oh, you can't tell me what to do. I'll eat whatever I want. But when she's loving me and accepting me the way I am, I have less need to eat because I'm not as stressed out. I don't have as much cortisol in my body. Cortisol stores fat. So you want to be in a state of relaxation. This is true for anything you want, whether it's making money or being healthy or being relaxed, whatever it is. If you meditate and you do certain exercises, like I teach something called the Sedona Method. It's a very simple technique for releasing all negative emotions. You can get rid of anger, fear, judgment, self-doubt, whatever it is. It's about a five-minute process, and literally you end up on the other side. You're relaxed, and you're calm, and your mind's clear. So these are the kind of things that people need to learn to do. Also, every night before you go to bed, I teach something called the mirror exercise. You look at yourself in the mirror, and you say, hi, Jack. I want to appreciate you for the following things. And anything you did that day where you kept your agreements, you finished a task, you kept some commitment you've made, like you ran your 3 miles or you did your stair stepper or you didn't eat cake, any disciplines kept like that, and any temptations overcome. You know, you didn't stay up till 3 a.m. playing Scrabble on some internet game site or whatever it might be. And then you end with, I love you. If you do that for 40 days in a row, you will absolutely change your relationship with yourself because it conditions you to appreciate yourself instead of to judge yourself. There's something in psychology called the law of replacement. You cannot get rid of a negative habit unless you replace it with a positive habit. When people stop smoking, they generally overeat. And people that stop alcohol and you go to an AA meeting, they're all smoking and eating donuts. The idea being that you have to replace something with something else. Now, obviously, overeating is not a good thing to replace smoking with, but the point being that you have to replace it. So if I can replace negative self-talk with positive self-talk, then eventually the positive crowds out the negative, becomes a new habit. Asking for what you want. Taking risks, getting the love and nurturing, getting hugs. You know, people say, well, I can't afford a massage. Well, buy a book for $8 on massage techniques and then just trade with your husband or your wife. You don't have to go out and spend $150 on a massage and spa. So there's a number of things you can do to build in self-nurturance, to build in positive self-talk, to celebrate your successes and not beat yourself up with your failures. Get the book, The Success Principles. It contains 64 principles of success. I'm not just trying to sell my book. I've sold almost 500,000 of them. And what I say is that life is like a combination lock. If you know the combination, doesn't matter if you're black or white, male or female, young or old, graduated from college or didn't, the lock has to open. The problem is most people don't have all the numbers and they don't have them in the right order. So if you read this book, there's 64 principles of success that I've garnered from 40 years of experience, having read 3,000 books, having attended over 600 seminars, and I've tried to boil it down into what I would call the Bible of success. So you can't get where you want to go without changing something or learning something new.
Thank you so much for spending the afternoon with us, and we look forward to talking with you again.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. My pleasure.
That's the end of our interview, and I hope you've enjoyed it. For more great health-related interviews, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.